Hey, we're really lucky tonight to have Don Shelby on the telephone. Of course, Don has been the man for news down in the Twin Cities for so many years. Don retired in 2010. He had worked for 32 years as an anchor, investigative reporter, and environmental correspondent for WCCO-TV. He also worked for 10 years as a radio personality on WCCO-AM. He's won numerous professional awards. He twice won the Pulitzer Prize of Broadcasting, which is the George Foster Peabody. He's also a member of the Climate Science Rapid Response Team Roundtable, serves on the boards of Minnesota Green Star and Minnesota Center for Environmental Advocacy, and is the Capital Campaign Chair for the Washburn Center for Children, which sounds like a pretty busy schedule for somebody who decided to retire. Don, I want to welcome you to the Roadhouse.
Hi, Buck. Hi, Bob. It's great to be on WTIP and Legends of the North Shore. I'm honored to be with you.
Oh. Don, you recently wrote an article that was published on MinnPost.com about Tony Hayward, who was BP CEO during the Deepwater Horizon explosion and oil spill disaster, about him being hired by Glencore, which is the principal investor in the mining operation planned by PolyMet for Hoyt Lakes, as their executive expert in charge of the environment and safety. What was the first thing that went through your mind when you learned of his appointment there?
Did you ever read Alice in Wonderland? The world is just getting curiouser and curiouser. And it is, it's like you're looking through the looking glass or a funhouse mirror. You can't believe that are they actually mining iron up there or mining irony? I've never figured out exactly what.
It's pretty wild, isn't it, that that somebody who CEO of BP ends up in our neck of the woods and in those kinds of circumstances.
Well, the people at PolyMet would argue that Tony Hayward will probably not be playing a big role anytime soon because they would say that Glencore is only an investor in PolyMet. But Glencore is very well known for once it makes an initial investment, does everything it possibly can to try to take controlling interest of that company. And you know, PolyMet is a Canadian company, and eventually there is a possibility that Glencore will become the overall owner of the operation that is going on there at Hoyt Lakes. And if it is all approved, then we could be seeing, it is a possibility, you could be seeing Tony Hayward up on the North Shore.
Now, maybe you could tell us a little bit about, I understand there's more background to be known about Glencore in the past.
Well, Glencore was started by a guy named Mark Rich, whose name may be familiar to some of your listeners at WTIP. Mark Rich, back during the Clinton administration, got into trouble with the federal authorities. In fact, he was indicted because he was selling oil and buying oil from Iran in contravention of the national security laws. He went on the FBI's 10 most wanted list. He absquatulated. No one could find where he was. In the meantime, his wife was very busy putting a lot of money in Bill Clinton's presidential campaign. And as Bill Clinton left office, as all presidents do, they make a series of pardons, and they pardoned Mark Rich. Mark Rich then since sold his portion of the company. And so whether you can make any direct relationship between Mark Rich's background and what Glencore became, but the imprint, the imprimatur of Mark Rich was on the company early on. And I think Glencore has tried to distance itself somewhat from that sort of image. And even though their website does carry Mark Rich's name, and it does tell the history of the company, but it has an unusual history that goes back to Rich's days, back into the Clinton administration. But this is one of the largest companies in the world in terms of commodity trading. And they're in everything from corn and soybeans to precious metals to energy, oil and petroleum. And they're in almost every corner of this universe. They have operations all over the world. And they have been accused, and it's all public record, they've been accused of human rights abuses. They have been accused of despoiling land, of terrible environmental degradation. And they fight back. They fight very hard. They've got a great team of attorneys, as you might expect. And it's just fair to say that Glencore does not have a very sterling record as a good corporate citizen.
What PolyMet intends on doing, I believe, is mining nickel and copper by a process called hard rock sulfide mining. What exactly is hard rock sulfide? What does that imply?
Well, it's kind of a different approach to getting metals out of the ground. Once you either do an open pit mine or a deep mine, as some are planning beneath Birch Lake up in the BWCA territory, that you can grind up this material into fine heaps and extract from that not only copper and nickel, but cadmium and precious metals, gold as well, platinum is involved, and you do such a large amount of it. Even though the return may be only, say, 1%, let's say, of everything you do, maybe even lower than that, 0.1% might be usable metals. The process is actually something that is commercially viable for them because you can get that metal in such amounts that has such a high price. Prices have been going up in all of these things that you can make it worth your while. But it pays out after a while. But there's a long stretch off the Mesabi Range that comes up, that runs a little bit south of the BWCA, then cuts into the BWCA territory and north of you guys. And it's, I think, in 2009, 32 permits were sought for that kind of mining in the area. Now, one of the things you got to keep in mind, Buck and Bob, is that on one side of the Laurentian Divide, all the water is running basically into Lake Superior or in the Mississippi River watershed, or it's running north in Hudson Bay and in the BWCA on the other side of the Laurentian Divide. Hoyt Lakes is on the south side of the Laurentian Divide, and so the exposed rock picks up with whenever it is rained on, creates a lot of sulfides or sulfates, and sometimes creates acid as well, can create a sulfuric acid if the right mix takes place. And if that flows out, if the dams break or if the holding ponds don't hold, then it can leach into the rivers. And in this case, in PolyMet, they're worried about the Partridge and the Embarrass rivers, as well as St. Louis, and then into Lake Superior and out in your neck of the woods, where there is great concern. More concern up close to the mine in the Embarrass and Partridge in the St. Louis, where there's great wildlife, wild rice beds, and the Fond du Lac Band is really, really upset about the possibility of the state raising the standard right now. And there are some people in the state legislature, especially from the Iron Range, who wish to raise the standard, how many micrograms per liter you can have in terms of a sulfate in the water. And they say it's old science, and they want to see some new science on this, but the old science that has been held up for the past 40 years as being the standard. And there is a lot of concern, but the greater concern is not just that which is happening on the south side of the Laurentian Divide. It's the permits that are being allowed on the north side of the Laurentian Divide and north of you, that anything that would happen in terms of a pollution runoff would go into the waters of the BWCA. And that has a lot of people terribly concerned. And in fact, Frank Moe up there, who is one of the great outfitters, but was also one of the great state legislators, had written a letter to his colleagues back in the state legislature and said, look closely at this, because you're talking about 400 jobs for mining, but you're talking about 30,000 jobs supporting the recreation and outdoor industry up here. And if this is polluted, then things are going to be pretty bad. And Frank points out that hard rock sulfide mining has a perfect record of pollution, no matter where it has been tried, anywhere in the world, and all over the United States, including the state of Wisconsin, Oregon, Montana. They have just ended up with horrible situations in terms of pollution and an incredible amount of money being tossed on the backs of the taxpayers to clean up the mess, if it is even if you have the ability to clean it up, and it's arguable that you can actually do that. So it's a big question. You have to keep on one hand, you have to weigh the importance of employment up on the range, the North Shore, and the people who had learned and dedicated their lives to mining. You know, these are some depressed areas, and you want commerce, you want things to move forward, you want people to have jobs, but then you have to ask yourself, at what price? And even those people who would work in the mines, I think, if they knew the history of hard rock sulfide mining, would question that, because most of the miners I know are also people who work and love the outdoors and love to go out and hunt and fish. And if they thought that there was a possibility, even a possibility, that you could despoil this beautiful land up there in your neck of the woods, then maybe they wouldn't be so eager to do this. And they can't make a promise. PolyMet has promised that they'll use every new technology available to prevent this from happening. But wherever the new technology has been attempted, it still hasn't prevented pollution.
We're speaking with Don Shelby, and Don has written an article about Tony Hayward's being hired by Glencore, a parent company, or at least an investor in PolyMet. Don, it seems as though big companies and jobs versus environment is an old story, and it's one that keeps getting repeated and repeated. And as you mentioned, with this economy, it is a problem for folks to see this perhaps fairly. How do you where does this play out next? Where is it now, and what happens next in the battle?
Oh, an interesting thing happened in this last legislative session. It was argued in the state legislature that companies ought to be able to draw up their own EIS, their own environmental impact statements, and then have it overviewed by the EPA under the Clean Water Act. But at the same time, the United States Congress was trying to strip, and is now currently trying to strip, the EPA of its ability to oversee water violations. And so we may be left with an inability to enforce our own laws if there is any kind of problem with the water. And so that has me concerned about the direction that Congress is going and the direction that our own state legislature is going. Because the Balancing Act is very clear. They run for office. Right now, in this economy, jobs is the number one thing. Job creation is the number one thing. And I think that was the point that Frank Moe was trying to make, that when we already got 30,000 jobs up here that are dependent upon the beauty of nature, and only 400 jobs in return, long-lasting jobs, would be construction jobs, of course, that PolyMet talks about, maybe as many as 3,000 initially to get everything built, but then 400 mining jobs, that is not necessarily a very smart trade-off, according to those people who are taking a hard look at this thing. And I'm just not sure, when I say they're taking a hard look at it, whether they really are taking a hard look at it. Tommy Rukavina stood up in the state legislature and said he wanted to increase the limit on sulfates in these streams to the human standard, 250 parts per milligram or per liter. And right now it's around 50, and he wasn't using any science at all. He just said if it's good for humans, it ought to be good for wild rice, And fortunately, that didn't go anywhere, but at least it was part of a discussion, part of the debate. And I don't believe that's the kind of science we can rely on as citizens to make public policy for us.
Now, Don, in your article, you spoke with Frank Scipione. I may not be pronouncing his name correctly, but he is the, I believe, the head of PolyMet.
Right. Good man.
He's been, you know, touting the new technology that they have, and it's being more environmentally friendly. Wasn't new technology also BP's horn to blow?
Yes, it was. And again, you're mining irony up there, Buck. And, the truth is that in testimony before Congress, which led immediately to Tony Hayward being asked to step down from BP after his testimony before Congress, there are a number of investigations that have gone forward, and then the Alabama Attorney General is leading the lawsuits against BP, and BP was in the business trying to blame lots of other people, lots of other providers, lots of other contractors for the reasons this happened in the Deepwater Horizon. But I think the proof in the pudding is that BP began to make massive changes in the way it approached deepwater drilling. And I think it was its own recognition that its own safety systems had failed. And so when you rely on promises of technology working, you can almost count on the fact, it's almost a Murphy's Law, that technology is going to fail. Now, if you know the technology is going to fail, if you know your computer is going to crash, what do? You back it up, you back up all your files, you make sure that's going to happen, you take into account that the technology is not always going to function properly. But in this case, once you have spilled pollution and poisons and toxins into pristine waters, then how do you undo that? And I don't believe there is a fail-safe. There wasn't a fail-safe for the Deepwater Horizon, and there isn't a fail-safe for the breaking of dams and the polluting of rivers and of streams and of lakes. There just isn't a fail-safe.
Don, I mentioned that as we first came to you on the telephone that you're an awful busy guy for somebody that retired in 2010. Can you tell us a little bit about MinPost.com, and you're now a contributor, it appears a weekly contributor to their news organization?
I've written 29,000 words for MinPost, which is an unusual thing for a television reporter. In fact, one of the fun things that I get from time to time, after having been 32 years on the air here, I think most of the print reporters in the state thought that I was basically ad-libbing everything and didn't know how to use a typewriter. And so I'll hear from Doug Groh or John Tesler or somebody like that who will say, "Hey, you can write," which is nice to hear after 45 years in journalism. MinPost is made up of a lot of the, and I don't count myself in this group, but some of the finest reporters ever to work in Minnesota, who during the retrenchment of both of the big daily newspapers in the Twin Cities took early retirement or whatever. So you still have this cadre of reporters who still have things to say, things to cover, things they know. And this is accessible at www.minpost.com, MINNPOST.com. And it's a wonderful outlet. It's the kind of newspaper that is must-read, internet newspaper that is must-read for almost anyone who is in business, cares about what's going on in the Twin Cities or in the state of Minnesota or in the world, because there are a lot of international reporters as well. So it's been really wonderful. Now I have a question for you guys.
Shoot.
I was up there Thursday in your fine town, and and Sunday I was in there and stopped at Sven and Ollie's and got the cheeseburger grand thin, gigantic pizza. And what the heck was going on Thursday? I couldn't get through town.
There's
this huge festival going on.
That's our annual Fisherman's Picnic. It's been going on since, I think 1952. And brings all the folks who have grown up here back, a lot of reunions, plus just a lot of activities. So it's a crazy time to come to Grand Marais.
Well, I had to park in Grand Portage.
Nice little hike for you, huh, Don?
I was headed up a Gunflint Trail, went into the Quetico, up to the Saginaw Guns, and into three lakes that had no name and one river that had no name. So I was as remote as you could possibly get.
Good for you.
And didn't see a soul for 3 days, which was wonderful. But this all comes back to the point that one of the reasons that I'm an energy and environment reporter is because I love nature, and I love the waters, and I love the forests, and I love the people who are part of that fabric of life and part of that sense of place. And Grand Marais is, and everybody who knows me knows this, it's true, is one of my favorite spots on Earth.
Well, thank you very much, Don. And we sure want to thank you here at the station WTIP for joining us here tonight. And we hope that you'll be able to do so again in the future. Don Shelby, he's probably Mr. News here at in Minnesota and has been for so long between radio and television and now the print media with MinPost.com. Thank you so much again, Don.
Well, I appreciate it, Buck and Bob. Thank you very much for having me on.